Everyone, thank you for tuning into the Postmodern Realities podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2018, and you're listening to episode 82 of Postmodern Realities. And I'm Melanie Cogdill, managing editor of the Christian Research Journal. On this episode, I'm joined by Megan Alman. Megan is a national speaker and writer in the area of pro-life apologetics with the Life Training Institute. She earned a BA in journalism with a concentration in magazines from the University of Georgia, and she holds an MA in Christian apologetics from Biola University. Megan has written an article for the Viewpoint column in the Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal. Our Viewpoint column addresses relevant contemporary issues in discernment and apologetics from a particular perspective that's not usually shared by all Christians. We hope that readers thinking on viewpoint issues will be stimulated and enhanced, whether or not they end up agreeing with the author. Megan's Viewpoint article is called What's in a Name? A Growing Trend to Abolish the Labels Pro-Choice and Pro-Life. Megan, it's good to have you on.
It's great to be with you, Melanie. Thank you.
So what was the media piece that spurred on this new trend of wanting to abolish labels like pro-choice and pro-life?
Sure. It was actually a video, and it came out about 5 years ago, so it's been out for a little while, and you can still find it on YouTube. The video clip is titled, Moving Beyond Pro-Life Versus Pro-Choice Labels, You're Not in Her Shoes. That's the subtitle. So when this video aired, the idea that it came out with was just that people didn't want to be using the terms pro-life and pro-choice to describe their viewpoint because, according to the video, it just simply did not adequately express people's feelings about abortion. So the wording included things like abortion is very personal and complicated, and for many people, it is not a black and white issue. This is what the video was claiming. And that these labels, pro-life and pro-choice, really limit the conversation you can have about the issue. So, you know, as the video kind of wraps up, you can go and find it and watch it. But basically, the claim is the majority of people believe that abortion should remain safe and legal, and that people just don't want to be labeled, but that women do need to have the access to safe and legal abortion whenever they need it, and that others don't really need to have a say according to whether or not they can do that. They do kind of promote the idea of having a conversation based on mutual respect and empathy, which those words alone I absolutely agree with, but not overall the idea behind the video.
So, you know, I mentioned that you are a speaker and a writer with Life Training Institute, and they focus on the area of apologetics in this issue. And so in what ways have you experienced, you know, the effects of these labels in your work?
Well, after the video came out, again, I said 5 years ago or so, what we've seen really is a shift in a lot of the wording that's used around the debate when it comes to abortion. So when I speak to students in schools, and predominantly when I'm out speaking, I'm speaking to high school and college students, what I've noticed is that many of the students have kind of adopted the rhetoric that resulted from this video and have kind of gone with the ideas. They've bought that rhetoric. So what I've heard is that push several years ago was successful in really kind of changing what we used to understand very clearly as pro-choice versus pro-life in the debate. Now we hear terms like women's rights, being pro-woman, women's health care. Think of some of that I've heard, reproductive rights, abortion choice advocates. So this type of wording that really kind of obscures part of what's going on with the issue. So when students have adopted this and they come out with it, what they have kind of behind the rhetoric they've adopted is this idea that they have, what they're supporting here is something that is a good, that is a justice for women without actually taking a closer look at what abortion is and does. It just kind of skips over that and shifts the focus to something else. And I think it's rather intentionally. So that run into that quite a bit. And what happens is when I present the arguments, arguing, of course, in a good way, when I present the reasons for why I am pro-life and why I think the pro-life position is true, reasons grounded in science and in philosophy, a lot of students are quick to say, wow, that, you know, that's really powerful. And I want to agree with what you say, but I don't want to be a traitor toward women. So the rhetoric is really strong and dangerous, I think.
So like this new shift, this new view that's kind of emerged in the last 5 years that you're talking about, it seems like there's an assumption about morality in this view. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
So, remember in the video when I was talking about some of the wording that they were using, that, you know, we're not in her shoes. These labels, they don't really adequately describe people's feelings about abortion. So these decisions have to be left to each woman and her own situation and those that she chooses to advise her and who can advise her best according to her circumstances. This is a particular view of morality because abortion is a moral issue, but it's one that assumes that, particularly with abortion, that it is an issue that involves a personal preference rather than being something we can talk about objectively. When I'm with students, I kind of define those issues. So I'll do that here. I'll define those terms rather. So I'll do that here because I think it's helpful. When something is subjective, when we talk about subjective claims, those are claims that are about the subject. They are matters of personal preference. It would be as if I am expressing my preference for dessert or my preference in movies or whatever. And if I were to make a claim like that, we could even say, hey, you know, M&Ms are the greatest treat on the face of the planet. Very much a subjective claim, but that claim is not really about M&Ms. It's about me, the subject. So subjective claims are like that. They say something about the subject. Objective claims are different. We use objective claims in our everyday life all the time. It's objective claims like the Empire State Building is located in New York City. That claim is not about me, not about the subject. That claim is about, we'll call them the objects in question. In this case, we have the Empire State Building, and we're talking about its relationship to this place, to New York City. So the objective claims are not about the individual. So what I argue is that moral claims are actually objective in nature and not subjective, although our culture tends to believe that they are more up to us to create and decide. Now, that itself is actually the consequences of ideas. And, you guys have a wealth of resources that have addressed this in the past and will do so in the future. There was a major shift on the thinking of morality right around the time of the 17th century Enlightenment that I think really caused us to end up where we are. But this gets particularly confused when it comes to abortion. So, when we're talking about abortion, usually things like this happen. I want to say abortion is wrong. And the response I get is, oh, well, that's your truth. I believe something differently. But when I say that abortion is wrong, I'm not talking about myself. The claim is not about me. In fact, when I make any moral claim, what I'm talking about is the nature of reality. And my claim either reflects the way the world really is, or it doesn't. So it's a different kind of claim than what people are assuming it to be and then what this video assumes it to be. So we've got to get past the confusion of that if we want to make any headway on being clear about what we're talking about.
And do you have any idea about the origins of the term pro-life and pro-choice? Did the pro-life movement make up pro-life, and did the pro-choice movement come out of the women's movement? I mean, that term?
No, that's a great question. I mean, the pro-life, I mean, of course, when we look at abortion, that one's pretty simple to understand. But the pro-choice term, all I know is that it means that people are for the freedom of choice when it comes to abortion. I actually think the term is a misnomer and a little bit misleading in the same way that some of this language is, because when we hear the term pro-choice, even though we have a particular kind of understanding of where it's coming from, the term itself doesn't indicate any kind of choice, any particular kind of choice. So, for example, I'm pro-choice on any number of issues, but not this one. This is a different kind of choice, and we have to look at, this is exactly kind of to my point, we have to look at what the choice is before we can determine whether or not I am for it or against it.
You know, it's interesting, as I hear reporting recently on the abortion issue, they're tending not to use the label pro-life, but they tend to, if they're interviewing someone, I'm talking about the mainstream media, in a piece, they'll tend to say anti-abortion. So you have someone who's pro-choice, and then you have someone who's anti-abortion. So in this trend to abolish these labels, pro-choice and pro-life, do you see any particular worldview assumptions that are being, you know, kind of underneath this trend that's going on right now?
Yeah, there is a particular view of what it means to be human, which is part and parcel with a worldview. Everybody answers that question. And here, the one that's kind of lurking under this view that abortion is something that is subjective, it's up to me, I define, you know, who I am and what I am, is very different from the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview has said from the very beginning that we are body and soul, that human beings are ensouled bodies. In other words, our body is essentially part of who we are. And so what we do to our bodies and what we do with our bodies actually affects us because it is essentially part of who we are. Now, the view that's at work here is not that one. This view is one that actually separates what's called the true self from the body and in a strange kind of way. There are some great thinkers who've done work on this that you can look at for more information after I'm done if you're interested. I know Robert George has written at length about it, Nancy Piercy. And the view is called body-self dualism. Again, splitting the body from the true self. On this view, the body is nothing more than a machine. It's just this pile of parts, basically, that serves the true self. And the true self is, well, I guess your psyche is a good kind of word that encompasses it. A person, in other words, is a collection of thoughts, memories, feelings, you know, a collective mind, if you will. And the body's job on this view is to function to serve the true self. So on this view, you can do to and with your body what you please as long as it serves the true self or brings pleasure to the true self or achieves happiness for the true self. I actually think this is the view that's lurking beneath a lot of what we're seeing, not only with abortion, but related issues. When it comes to abortion, what this does is it successfully kind of separates the idea that a human being is a whole entity. In other words, it separates mere human beings from persons. And that's a key part of the debate, particularly on college campuses. You kind of hear this language and it can be confusing sometimes to go, oh, wait, I thought human beings and persons were the same thing. Well, certainly, I think that they are. But this view says otherwise. This view says that a mere human being is simply a physical thing. And if until it becomes a person, which usually involves some kind of a cognitive level that it needs to achieve, until that point, it can be disposed of, it can be used for parts. You know, we're kind of seeing different ways that this can play itself out. And it is a dangerous idea. Certainly in case of abortion, it results in thousands of human deaths every single business day. After all, if I can define what it is to be a person, then I can define human beings right out of existence. So part and parcel with the moral relativism that I was describing in the last question that you asked, the last thing we addressed, the idea that morality is up to you and me to decide and to define. This one has pretty devastating results. John Stone Street recently actually said, I heard him, I actually saw it on Facebook and it stuck with me. Ideas have consequences, which is something we all say. Dangerous ideas have victims. And this is certainly a dangerous idea in what it's doing and what we see it do through abortion.
You're listening to the Postmodern Realities Podcast from the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest is Megan Alman, and Megan has written an article for the Viewpoint column in the Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal. And her article is called What's in a Name? A Growing Trend to Abolish the Labels Pro-Choice and Pro-Life. To read her article as well as an upcoming Viewpoint in a future issue asking if Christians can drink alcohol virtuously, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50. And to subscribe online, go to our website, equip.org. If you already have a subscription, consider a gift subscription for your pastor, a friend, or family member, or should they all have subscriptions, please share this podcast on your social media accounts to let others know how they can subscribe to the journal. You're just talking about just the differences between humans and persons, those terms. And, you know, it's really interesting. As a matter of fact, a few weeks ago, I was listening to NPR and they were having a new series, and the series was called How to Raise a Human. And actually, when they said that, that gave me pause, because I thought they're taking the word person out of there. So they're just equating human in terms of, you know, just like naturalism, humans or dogs or cats or, you know, goldfish, you know, how to take care of your pet almost type of thing. But it's really interesting that they chose that word human instead of the word person. You know, in your article, you write that labels come with pros and cons. So what are some of the cons of labels?
Sure. We all know that labels can be loaded. And it is true that, like the video said, nobody likes to be simply labeled in a dismissive way. So labels can be abused. They can be misused. I think in terms of this particular piece that we're talking about, labels can be used to manipulate. They can be used intentionally to make the truth very obscure, or to shift focus away from something. I think there are reasons that this happens. Some of them are not intentional on our behalf. Some of it flows from the ideas of the worldview stuff that we've been talking about. And we all have a particular worldview. We probably, none of us have it all exactly right. So certainly we should be continually evaluating and trying to make sense of the labels we're using and think carefully. I think sometimes, you know, we just adopt labels because we haven't really thought about them. And when I say labels, it could be as simple as a term that we hear in the world around us, whether we hear it, like you said a minute ago, through news media, or, you know, on the radio or in a film, or someone said it, a teacher said it. We kind of hear that term and adopt it, and maybe not are not aware that that term comes with baggage. Sometimes that baggage can be what we place on it, because we associate certain names or certain terms with certain things in our own lives. And that's certainly true for others. We all have loyalties in our past, whether it's, you know, our experiences, our upbringing, our culture, our backgrounds. Again, our worldviews can kind of inform the way we think about different words. So, for example, in the article, I mentioned the words liberal and conservative. The words liberal and conservative, the labels liberal and conservative, come with a whole host of baggage these days. We can't even hear those words without kind of jumping to an entire box, like right there on the doorstep of your thinking. There it is. Open it up. But you know, if we look at the meanings of the words, liberal is a term that can be used very positively or negatively depending on how someone's throwing it around. But the meaning of the word is that it's someone who's open to new ideas or new behavior or opinions. In fact, you know, traditionally, the liberal viewpoint has kind of a very built-in tolerance about it, that I'm going to say what I think, but I'm open to hearing your position. On the other side of that, conservative simply means preserving the status quo. Someone who's conservative is going to care a lot about tradition and want to kind of keep things going as they are. Today, when those terms are used, they're very politically motivated, of course. And I mean, people hear that I'm pro-life. I get a whole host of things dumped on me just because of that particular label. Radical conservative is one of them. And I do happen to be conservative in my views. But if we're just looking at the definitions of the words as I gave them, a little more careful thinking would kind of go, huh. It's interesting to say that to be pro-life is a conservative viewpoint, because as it is right now, the status quo is that abortion, as the video said, people want it to be safe, legal, and rare, but legal and allowed. So to say that I'm pro-life and I don't want abortion to be legal would be to say, would be against the status quo. We have to just think more carefully about the labels we're throwing around and using. Christopher Kaiser is the ethicist who actually brought that particular idea to my attention. I thought it was intriguing.
You bring up some really good points, but we also at some level need a label, right, to identify ourselves, you know, in a specific way, especially for us. You know, we'd say, well, we're Christians. Well, that has different meanings to different people, probably, as you just stated, words can have different meanings, but it does identify that we believe in Christianity. So why do we need labels? And, you know, are there ways that as Christian apologists, we can use labels in a way that communicates clearly, but also, you know, with a gracious manner.
Absolutely. We do need labels. We absolutely need them. We need language. And language is a labeling art. Language is what we use to refer to the world around us and to refer to it as accurately as we can. And when we are using labels with integrity, we are out to get closer to the truth with one another. So when we use labels, even the ones that we kind of go, oh, that word comes with so much baggage, but they're still useful. They're useful because they at least bring us into the ballpark of one another's thinking. It is a step toward getting at the truth, but certainly not the finishing point. Even the ones I just used, conservative or liberal, or in terms of what we're talking about, pro-life or pro-choice. When we start off with that, it's a starting off point. It at least gives us an idea of where to go from there. Now, I don't think we can go so far as someone like Brad Kallenberg is a very postmodern thinker who says that we actually use language to create, that language literally makes reality. I don't think we can go that far. It's interesting that he would state that, I don't know how he knows that. In other words, can he step outside of his own language community, as it were, to make that objective claim for the rest of us? But it is vitally important that we use language and use it carefully, because we can refer to the reality around us, and we can inspire change through the words that we use. So the example I gave in the article, if you were to read it, and you can read more about it in the article, but my daughter had recently read, at the time I was writing, Helen Keller's biography. And she was captivated by Helen learning her first word. So Helen, who had lost her ability to speak and to, or I'm sorry, not to speak, but to see and to hear through a childhood illness when she was a baby, was growing up blind and deaf. And her teacher, Ann Sullivan, was using a method of signing words into her hand to try and teach her language about the world around her. And one day, it hit when Helen realized that the liquid pouring from the spout outside of her house was the same thing, was being represented, not the same thing as, but was being represented in the word water that Anne was signing into her hand. She made that connection and the world opened up for her. She was able to begin having meaningful interaction with the world. So the danger is that if we do away with labels, as this video suggests, and then we follow that to its logical conclusion, we're in big danger of kind of being these just our own little universes, our own little autonomous individualistic universes kind of orbiting around each other and having no meaningful interaction, which is, I think, very much part of what it means to be human, a human being who's flourishing. Now, when we are communicating, we can use our labels very, very graciously. So I think it's important for us to understand that this is an issue, and because labels can be so easily misused or abused, or because we can assume so much when we use them, I think as Christians or as effective communicators, we need to be willing to take the time to define the terms that we're using. I know, for example, when I'm speaking, whether it's to an audience or to an individual about abortion, it's important that I define what I mean by abortion, because it helps direct the conversation. The word abortion is another label that comes with a whole host of baggage. I typically use, because I think it's very fair and effective, Christopher Kaiser's definition: abortion is the intentional killing of a human fetus. And when I use that definition, that gives us a starting off point for what I think, what my view is, and how we're going to talk about it from there. That frees the conversation up so that the person I'm talking to can ask me more about it. But it also achieves some clarity just at the starting off point. In other words, as Tim Uhlhoff says, you know, communication is the art of meaning making. I am making my meaning clear and doing so in a gracious way. And that gives someone else, you know, a fair shot at interacting with it, which is healthy.
In your article, you have a subtitle or section of it, and you call that the myth of moral neutrality. Can you define that for us? Why do you think that moral neutrality is a myth?
Sure, yeah. Well, particularly when it comes to this issue, Melanie, because I think very much so, that is what the video that we're talking about is trying to achieve, kind of this neutral place when it comes to the abortion issue. Let's stop, you know, being contentious about it. Let's be respectful. But when they say that, what they mean is, let's agree that we can let women have access to abortion and it should be fine with everyone, which is not neutral. Yeah, I think that people's position in the abortion issue can never really be neutral because it's always informed by a worldview. We've done a lot of talking about that. But that worldview, whatever it is informing that individual on how to answer the most important question at the center of the entire debate. And that is, what is the unborn? What is the unborn, and what is the moral status of that thing, that entity? Or as we, you know, we teach that at Life Training Institute all the time. The question at the center of the debate is, what is the unborn? Everyone answers that question, whether they answer it through their words or through their actions. And the fact of the matter is, either the unborn is a human being just like you and me who is worth protection and respect, or it is not. Either the unborn can be killed for just about any reason, or it can't. There's not really neutral ground there. We have to answer that. What is the unborn? And then we can talk about whether or not that entity can be killed. You know, even in under the federal law, with the wording under the law that which made abortion legal in 1973, Roe versus Wade and its sister case, Doe versus Bolton, you know, the claim by the justices who were writing on that decision says that there's really no consensus on when life begins, which was supposed to be kind of this neutral claim. I take issue with the claim as it is because science tells us differently, but they did take a position. It was not neutral because in deciding the law as it was, they were claiming birth is when life begins and can be protected. No neutral ground to stand on because everyone has to answer that question. Depending on how they answer it, you're going to fall on one side or the other. I think that science and philosophy are on our side when they say that the unborn is human and valuable.
So when the Christian apologist encounters this mindset, like you were talking about early, in other words, well, I'm personally pro-life, but I can't put my beliefs on an entire country. And I think, you know, it's 2018 and this is an election year. And so therefore, we're going to come across this a lot, probably on social media, Facebook, and in discussions with people. And we might even hear people who are running for office say that, well, I'm a churchgoer and that's my personal faith. But when it comes to the issue of women's rights or access for women to abortion, you know, I can't put my personal beliefs as a person of faith onto them. So how should the Christian apologist respond to that?
Yeah, and not only will we hear that, we have heard that from people like John Kerry and Joe Biden, both of whom said that very thing, almost word for word, what you just said in debate situations. When someone makes that claim, and I do run into that claim probably more than any other with students, it's that moral relativism coming into play. I am personally pro-life, but I can't place or push my morality on other people. I would urge someone to ask themselves, in fact, I usually ask the question, what is it that you personally oppose about abortion? And whatever the answer to that question is, we've got to decide if that's a good enough reason for other people to continue having abortion. So this happened on a college campus to me. There was a young woman who was at a display on the campus that she was not happy about. She was clearly pro-choice. She had a sign that said pro-choice and proud of it. And I approached this young woman because she was kind of angry. She was saying some things to people who were passing by. And I asked her if we could talk for a minute. She was very open to that. And so I asked her about her poster. And she said, here's the deal. I would never have an abortion, but what you guys are doing on our campus, which was having a dialogue about abortion, she said, I don't think you should be allowed to have that here. I think you should leave the campus. And so I said, well, thanks for being honest with me. May I ask you a question? And I asked her that question. What is it that you personally oppose about abortion? Now, she didn't hesitate. She said, it kills a baby. And so I simply asked her again if I had her view correct, if I understood it. I said, you think abortion kills a baby? Those were her words, not mine. But you think that it should be legal for other people to kill babies? Usually, when you do something like that, when you try to present the view as you've just heard it, understood it, what it does is, for someone like her, because she had bought that this was a subjective type of issue, a preference type of issue, I was just trying to point out to her that it isn't, so we could have a real conversation about it. And we did. Now, what's interesting to me about this whole way of thinking is that we don't think this way about other moral issues that are important to us, particularly injustices that are important to us. You know, we would never look at someone and say, oh, you're anti-slavery. That's your truth. I think that if you don't like slavery, then you shouldn't own one. You know, or, you know, we don't look at other people and say, oh, I see that you don't like spousal abuse. That you don't like it. Well, you shouldn't beat your spouse. If I said that, somebody would look at me like I'm nuts, and they would be right. Because clearly, I do not grasp the severity of that type of issue. There are certain things we cannot do to other human beings. When it comes to abortion, it is just that confused out there.
I think you're right about that. I don't think people have really thought through their worldviews. And, you know, every time there's an election year, there's always, you know, discussions on Facebook. I don't know that they change people's minds, but sometimes it's a way to interact with people that have a different view that might not have heard other worldviews. And if you really press them, they don't know what to say to that, you know. And that's a good example about slavery, because people say, well, you know, it's not, I don't personally believe that I would get an abortion, but other people should be able to do it. I just said, if something is wrong, isn't it wrong for everybody? In other words, if slavery, and I use that example, if slavery is wrong, isn't it wrong for everyone? And it doesn't matter. Well, they say, well, we just have to go with the majority of the opinion. But I said, if killing Jews in World War II is wrong, and only 10% of the people thought it was wrong, shouldn't it be wrong for everybody? I mean, normally people don't think through those kinds of things. So how do you think this article can really equip Christians to bring the gospel to bear on this issue? And also, how do some of these ideas just relate to having a Christian worldview, not just having a Christian world, but for Christians to live Christianly?
Good question. Absolutely. That the Christian worldview is, I think it really shines when we look at this issue through the lens of the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview, after all, from the beginning, as I said earlier, does say that human beings are body and soul, but it goes further and says that human beings are intrinsically valuable in light of their humanity. It provides the perfect grounding place for human equality, human rights, human value. In fact, it says that, hey, you don't have to do anything, any function, any ability to earn your value as a human being, whether it be in God's eyes or in the eyes of others. So even though we kind of get that skewed sometimes, the truth is that human beings are valuable simply in light of being human. They are not commodities. They cannot be bought and sold. And they're certainly not disposable, as in the case of abortion, when they stand in the way of something. So Christianity provides this wonderful, a very inclusive view of humanity, and certainly an answer to the abortion issue. And not only that, but when it comes to talking about labels, I mean, God created the world through the word. He spoke it into being. The special revelation that we have through the scripture is in words that we can understand. I remember having a friend one time who stopped one day and she said, praise God that he did not choose to reveal himself through mathematics. As you know, that our Bible is not written in number equations. So certainly he does reveal himself through math, because math works and he's a logical God. But I thought that was kind of humorous, because she's not that great at math. She doesn't love it. But he gave us words, and our words can have meaning. And although we don't necessarily create through our words in the way that God does, we can have great impact when we use our labels well. We can encourage one another. We can build one another up. We can instruct. We can correct. We can learn, and we can pray. And when we use our labels well when it comes to the issue of abortion, we can save lives too.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid fire questions. So, Megan, it's summer. Ice cream gelato or frozen yogurt?
Ice cream.
Introvert or extrovert?
Both.
Call or text?
Generally text first.
And I'll ask a fashion question. Dress, skirt, or pants?
Dress.
And if you were to go on vacation with your family, if money was no object, what would you like to do?
A beautiful beach somewhere. Doesn't matter where, but I am currently surrounded by beautiful mountains, which is where I live now. So I'm a little bit landlocked and I'm missing the beach.
Well, thanks, Megan, for being a guest on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Thanks, Melanie. It's always an honor.
Today's guest is Megan Allman, and she has written an article for our Viewpoint column in the Volume 41, Number 3 issue of the Christian Research Journal, and her article is called What's in a Name? A Growing Trend to Abolish the Labels Pro-Choice and Pro-Life. To read her article, as well as an upcoming Viewpoint article asking if Christians can drink alcohol virtuously, please subscribe to the journal. A 6-issue subscription is now at a new lower price of $33.50, and to subscribe online, go to equip.org. We'd like to hear from you, so connect with us on social media, like the Bible Answer Man Facebook page, and follow CRI, Christian Research Journal, Hank Hanegraaff, and the Bible Answer Man on Twitter. Follow the Bible Answer Man on Instagram, and please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man channel on YouTube. If you like this episode, please subscribe to the Postmodern Realities podcast on iTunes. And when you rate and review our podcast, it helps others to find our content. So please share this episode on your social media accounts. Be sure you tune in daily to the Bible Answer Man broadcast hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff, who answers your questions live on air. To ask Hank a question, call 888-ASK-HANK Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. In addition, head to iTunes and subscribe to Hank Unplugged. It's Hank's new audio podcast. You'll follow Hank off the grid, where he has in-depth conversations with some of the brightest minds discussing topics you care about. So until our next Christian Research Journal author conversation, thanks for listening to the Postmodern Realities podcast.